Voices Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome to Strength Depositions. I'm Chuck Zarowski, and I'm sitting here at the world-famous Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan. I'm with the Strength Depositions crew. I'm here with Jen...
I did it again.
Prynance. Yes. Rob Fucciarelli, Mike Folks, and then there's me. Shane can't be here today, so we wish Shane were here. And we're sitting here with Zach Gallman of Elite FTS. Zach's a writer for Elite FTS. He does a column, Finding Strength. So if you see any of the gyms, like you'll see Zach having video of different gyms around the area and around the United States. And he will talk about like what makes a nice powerlifting gym and a strongman. Sorry, guys, we got some people training here today. And
we have some pro strongmen here today.
We have pro strongmen here today. And I just got a quick workout in, and it was, you know, I feel like I'm stronger just because I'm in the gym. But Zach is a former airborne. He was in the Army, and he did airborne. He's an Elite FTS writer and a columnist for Elite FTS. He is coached at Spot Athletics with JL Holdsworth, who, if anybody in the strength game knows, JL Holdsworth is one of the best minds in the world for strength. He's done amateur world strongman twice. He's done powerlifting, and he's also getting ready to start doing like weightlifting. All that, and we're going to take away that he's an Ohio State Buckeye, and even though that's true... We're still gonna welcome him here. So,
guys, that's his car with the Ohio State decals.
No, that's Justin's.
Don't even get him going, please.
So, Zach, thanks for being here at Strength Depot, and we really, really welcome you here. Thanks for showing up, man.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here. Definitely.
So, Zach, tell me a little about yourself. Tell me a little about the Finding Strength site, because everybody that knows you probably knows you from that, from Elite.
Yeah, so I've been in strongman for about 9 years, lifting for, you know, well over 20. And after coaching at the Spot Athletics and everything, I've always been a big Anthony Bourdain fan, and I always kind of watched, and I was like...
I knew I liked you.
And I was like, why isn't anybody doing this with gyms going around? Because there's so many good gyms popping up, and there's good gyms all over the world with great athletes and coaches. So... after some kind of, you know, personal hardships, I left the spot. Had nothing to do with the gym itself. I just, you know, wasn't into coaching and stuff at that point. And so I decided to start doing this. That was about a year and a half ago. And, my main thing is connect people with the coaches, athletes, and gyms. Because ever since I got into strongman, kind of, I've always been told that it'll never be a big sport. You know, everybody was kind of... fulfilling this self-defeating prophecy. And so I decided to change it because I thought that was bullshit. And so, you know, I've started just driving around the country, meeting different people and trying to get it out there as much as I can. And thankfully, you know, Elite FTS, Dave Tate gave me a spot to write on there. Matt Vincent with Hey Brand Goods gave me a spot. And recently, Lynn Morehouse, a trained strongman, he's, you know, helped me with some stuff, and he's trying to get people in more into strongman, so trainstrongman.com. So yeah, that's kind of it. I just want people to get connected with strongman, because I'm sick of hearing people say, oh, you do strongman, you throw the balls around like that Polish guy. And I'm like, yeah, you mean the guy that retired like 10 years ago? And so, you know, it's getting bigger. People are starting to understand a little bit more, but it's not where I want it to be. And so somebody's got to do it, so I decided it'd be me, and you know, that's about it, I guess.
It's incredibly engaging, and to like, and I think we talked about it earlier before, like off air, we talked about how like the inception of CrossFit has helped a lot of these gyms come out, like these, you know, warehouse gyms and whatnot. And I think like the sense of community in like these gyms, do you find that the majority of the gyms that you visit have that sense of community?
Yeah, definitely. The biggest thing I've noticed from any of the successful gyms have been, you know, everybody started with a bag in the back of their car training people or in a garage. And, you know, nobody has ever tried to be like, let's get our memberships up to 500. They're just like, we're going to open up a gym. If you want to come train strongman, you want to train hard, come. If you don't, fine. We might not be for you. And but you grow a bigger sense of community that way because everybody knows each other. Everybody is connected. They're in the same, you know, they're going through the same suck together. And that's kind of all the successful ones grow that way. You know, it's just.
And I know that's really what they do. Tina and Shane, who own Strength Depot, that's really what they do here. They're really selective on their members, so people, you know, reach out to them. And they actually bring them in and get to know them, meet them before they just hand over, can you take your money? You know, they want people here that want to be here and that are going to work hard and really take ownership. They have skin in the game here.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing because, like we were saying before, you know, a lot of strong men and women will move out of their hometown because they don't have a place to train because it does mean that much to us. And so when you go to a gym like this, if you just have people dicking around, you know, doing photo shoots instead of training, it's like, I don't want to be here. So these gyms, I like the exclusivity, but it is so welcoming at the same time if you want to be there. If you're just going to go in there to bitch, you know, don't come. And that's how all the gyms I've been to that are really successful are, and I like that a lot.
Damn it, you moved the screw. What was I saying?
Go ahead. Jen is a good example because Jen will drive 8 hours from Wisconsin to come out to train at Strength Depot. It's sometimes I get them confused.
Do the Strength Depositions podcast.
Finding strength before the whole thing started.
Well, what's funny? Yeah. Well, that's. So.
You guys were kind of doing the same thing. You just were writing about it and you were living it.
Yeah.
Going to all these different gyms.
So the and Chuck, you said the same thing. So the first time I came here, it was like I found my people because, like you said, the excuse and it being exclusive sounds bad, but it's really not. It's you want that like-minded people to we motivate each other, we support each other. There's not to me, I've not found a better environment than this.
You coined it best. You create your bubble,
right.
And you come here and create that bubble and jump right in, and you're right in. You know, it's.
Yeah, it's
there's no exclusivity to it.
I don't know if you guys have read the Sebastian Younger book Tribe or whatever. I might be getting the title wrong, but basically, I've been listening to a lot of kind of sociologists and stuff who've been talking about. You can only really have enough room in your head for about 150 people, and after that, it's just kind of very unpersonal. And so, that's what these gyms create. It creates an environment for you to thrive because you need to be social and everything. And so. When you come to a gym and you don't know anyone, you're not motivated. You come in here and you start sucking and somebody's like, hey, quit being a pussy and fucking do that. You're going to be like, all right, yeah. And you like that, you know? It's because people are real with you. They're not going to be fake. And if you're in a gym like this where everybody knows each other, you can't be fake because somebody's going to call you out on that.
It's almost like this bourbon that we have on the table isn't fake. This Breckenridge bourbon is legit and real. So, but I think at Barbell, yeah, at Detroit Barbell, I remember when I went in there, the first time I went in there, the motto was don't suck.
Yeah.
Everything was like you'd get ready to do a massive set or whatever you were doing, your PR or whatever, and it'd be like, don't fucking suck. And that's what it is. You remember that, Rob?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And Shane said it here. He's like, don't embarrass the gym. You know, like if you're a member here, that's kind of a big, you know, big deal. Take pride in that. Don't fucking embarrass the gym, no matter what you're doing.
Because before I came here, you know, when I would get into the gym, I'd have my headphones on, didn't want to talk to anybody, didn't want to be bothered. But now that you're part of a community, it's more so you get here, you got to make your rounds. It's like 30 minutes of chit-chatting and talking with people before you even begin
that's
your warm-up.
That's your warm-up.
That's my social time. I'm a hugger, so I go around and hug everybody in the gym when I see them. So if you see me, hug me.
You're grabbing butts, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, gym's a perfect place to grab butts. There's usually nice ones.
Amen on that. Got a quick question for you, Zach. Like, how did this start? Like, how did you go from, like, I know you know, you were looking at it, the inception of it, Anthony Bourdain and whatnot, but how did it start where you just said, I'm going to do some videos and start traveling?
Honestly, I left my job at the spot in, I want to say, November 2015. And I just started writing a business plan, and I started just kind of writing down ideas, and I, you know, bounce them off people's heads. I think I talked to, like, you know, Paul Carter, Matt Vincent, Dave Tate, a couple others, and, you know, I was just getting as many ideas as I could. And then I went and bought a camera, and I just kind of started doing it. I had a little bit of a plan, but it was really just kind of shooting from the hip. And I've learned a lot since then. I've learned, I probably shouldn't be doing this by myself, and I need a team. But, you know, I'm doing what I can for now. And really, it's just like, you know, it's like anything else. You just practice, and you get interested in something. You work your ass off. Eventually, you get somewhat good at it. And I think I'm getting to the point.
You were telling me about you were getting to the point of where
you need a team. Yeah. You're
pretty good at it. So, you know, I'm getting to the point where I think I need to get a team. It's something I've been doing by myself most of the time, but I definitely need some help for it. But I think, you know, I'm getting somewhat better, and you know, kind of hopefully it turns into something bigger than it has. It's been growing pretty slowly and surely, but not at the rate I'd like it to, and, you know, hopefully we'll go somewhere in the future.
Zach, I wanted to ask you, the cultures at each one of these gyms that you find, is it they're all within the same ballpark? One's way up here intensity-wise, one's here, one has different leadership at these different places. What is, like, the trend that you're finding at all these gyms? Is it similar or is it dissimilar?
It's pretty similar at most of the gyms. You know, the one big thing is not only are they training together, but they're doing stuff outside of the gym together is one thing I found a lot.
And so it's real team building.
It's real team building, you know.
It becomes a family.
Yeah, you know, you go to a contest, like yesterday at Nationals, everyone had a Strength Depot t-shirt on. And any contest you go in that area where somebody's competing, everyone that's going to watch, they're wearing that gym's t-shirt. They're there helping out, and it's just, it's very similar. There's no, I really haven't been to any successful gyms that have had that, you know, cold shoulder, you're either a hardcore asshole or you're not type vibe. It's come in, people give you shit if you're gonna bitch and cry, but they're still there for you. They're not gonna be an asshole about it.
Did you go to West Side back in the day when it was and how do these places compare to something as intense and rough as West Side was? Because when you went in there, It was a little different. And powerlifting's a little different opposed to strongman, where I think strongman has a way better community and culture.
Well, I would never call myself a West Sider, but I went and trained there for like 2-3 months back in, I think, 2010. And you know, honestly, as much as people have that kind of vision of it, it was pretty welcoming to me. You know, obviously I was the new guy, and they called me strongman instead of Zach. And but I still talk to a lot of the guys that I train with, John Shackelford, every once in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, I was there with AJ Roberts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I learned a little bit, but I wasn't there long enough to really get the whole feel of it. So, but I do know, you know, I have a lot of friends. Dale Holdsworth, obviously my old boss, he was probably one of the best guys ever come through West Side. And I've heard some of the stories, and they kind of look at it more like a brotherhood, I would say.
That'd be a great book for your future business ventures if you could get those stories put together.
Yeah, well, I know Dave Tate just put out West Side, you know, his West Side, like, I think 1990 through 2005 or something, kind of his
recent
time there.
Wait,
yeah, what? He just put out on Elite FTS.
Okay. It's an ebook? Is it an ebook?
No, I think it's just an article series on Elite FTS. And so he talks a lot about it. And, you know, I think from what I've learned just from talking to people, I think it changes like any other culture. It kind of changes over the years, like who's in the gym and who's not.
A key figure that leaves and they hold that intensity, and then things change a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Transforms.
You know, somebody's, because usually there's always a leader. Like any other type of group, there's always somebody that kind of leads. And once, if they leave or they have to go, you know, they move, then somebody usually has to fill that spot. And hopefully they've built on that same principle and things don't change too much. But, you know, like everything else, everything evolves. And if you're not evolving, you're dying. So,
Favorite gym you've been to? Were your personal favorite? You're like, holy hell, this is, I could just stay where I'm at right now and we could conclude this journey some other day of going around.
That's a hard one. I would say either probably Lightning Fitness up in Connecticut, Matt Mills' gym.
Mm-hmm.
He has everything you need. Yeah. Everybody's just super nice.
The people that train there.
People that train there. Justin Fisher, Rob Carney, Joey, all those guys. And Matt. No, Matt's great. And, I mean, there's tons of gyms. It's really hard to pick, honestly.
How many gyms have you been to? How many different gyms have you been to on your series? Not just on your series, but that you visited personally.
I would say about 40 to 50 across the country. Mm. It's hard to say, too, because some gyms, you walk in, like Matt's kind of has everything because it has all the equipment. It's huge, has all the people, a good community. Then you go to gyms like I was in Primal Strength down in Charlottesville, Virginia. And it's not big. They don't have, I mean, he's got a lot of stuff, Charles Tankersley. But the community there is just amazing. Like, after we're done filming, they went out, grabbed a couple six-packs, and just kind of hung around and bullshitted for a while and talked about the contest coming up, their lives, and everybody knew each other. So it's the gyms, not necessarily to have all the equipment. It's when I walk in and you're just, you can see it's like a family. Those are my favorite gyms. So
Jen had an idea. She wanted me to ask you, not that she's not here right now, what's your bucket list? You got a gym that, like, or a series of gyms that you want to go to that you're like, man, I got to get here?
I probably wouldn't be going to a gym as much as it would be. I really want to travel around, like, the UK and parts of Europe and kind of do all the strength challenges that they have.
Damn.
I would say my bucket list dream training thing was already accomplished with, you know, Zydrunas Savickas.
When I was
in Lithuania for 3 weeks with him, and wow. I got to train. He owns 5 gyms, and they're kind of, you know, we look at them as Globo gyms, but he also has this training center underneath, like, an old amphitheater, underneath the stairs, in the middle of nowhere in this, you know, national forest in Lithuania, and it's just dungy. He has all the old IFSA stuff, and you're just like, wow. And, you know, I got to train log with him and hang out with him, and so that was, you know, that's an experience I'm always going to remember. But, yeah, for me, I really want to go do all the old strength tests and just kind of see if I can do them. I think I can, but I don't know. It's just cool to me.
You almost look like you could be related to Zavikas.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I am stocky. He's a little taller than me, a little bigger than me. But
you're a little more handsome.
Wow.
He's getting frisky over here.
Hey, Zach, what do you think is the truest test of strength? Like, you've done many different types of, like, you know, implementation or whatever. In your opinion, what's the truest test of true absolute strength?
Absolute strength? I would have to say picking something off the ground and putting it over your head. It's everything in your body. I mean, after that, I would say deadlift and then a squat. But just there's something primal about it, and it just takes every muscle in your body to get, you know, a log from the ground up over your head. And, you know, usually the guys that are the top pressers are pretty good at everything else. But you can be a great squatter and a shitty presser. You can be a great deadlifter and a terrible at something else. It's just, I've never found too many guys that are great overhead pressers and really bad at something else. So
That's interesting.
Mm.
As far as for the gyms that you go to, what are the common implementations that you see? Like the common, like obviously you see a squat rack and you see like, you know, a bench press and what else, monolifts usually. What else do you see in there that you see that's a commonality between them?
Pretty much the biggest thing I would say is when you go to a gym, a lot of the strongman gyms have a lot of homemade equipment, and that's kind of cool to see because usually they started small and they grew, but they kept that equipment and they still train with that equipment, and it's almost kind of like a throwback to their roots and that they don't want to part with. And that kind of just reminds me of when I started in strongman, and these gyms weren't available to me. You know, I trained in a garage with Team Boss out in Columbus, Ohio, and we had homemade stuff. We had a lot of stuff made by Steve Slater, you know, the old school stuff that you don't see very often anymore. And I think it's just these gyms have grown out of the idea of taking nothing or making something out of nothing, and that's kind of what it is. Like, you know, you go to any super huge powerlifting gym and you see squat racks and bars. You go to a strongman gym, even really successful ones, you got a couple squat racks, but then you just have toys laying around, you know? And that's, I think that's awesome. And you make do with what you have.
Oh, sorry. So I was wondering, could you walk us through how you set up the visits or the interviews with all of the gym owners? Do you reach out and then do you have questions ready to go or you do it on the fly? Things like that.
So usually when I first started, I was kind of reaching out to people, and really it was, I would say I'd send them kind of a outline of what I wanted, but I kind of soon learned that that really doesn't work usually. You know, like Mike Tyson says, you always have a plan until you get punched in the face.
We reference it often.
Yeah. And so I knew what I wanted kind of. So I'd email them, say, hey, I want to come out and film your gym. And they'd be like, okay. So I go out there, and they, you know, pretty much my whole thing when I started off was, I'm just going to be a fly on the wall. You guys do your thing. I'm going to video it. I'll edit it later. Then I would just do random interviews with athletes that the coaches or owners wanted me to talk to. Then I would try to interview the coaches and the owners. I was usually more interested in the coaches because I like to hear their philosophy and training. And then, you know, they always hype up their athletes. But I also want to give athletes that I think deserve credit but don't get it because they're not, you know, not the elite of the elite. I want to give them a voice too. And as I've gone on, I've learned as much as I want to interview everyone, I have to turn it down to like one or two people because then that just drags on for forever. So I usually try to have the owners or coaches say, give me one athlete or one or two athletes that you want me to really talk to. Interview them. Most of my questions are kind of off the fly. I usually wait to interview until after they train because then I can hear them kind of talking with each other, see their training, and then I develop ideas for what I want to ask them because, you know, when people are training, they get pretty personal.
Yeah.
And so without even thinking about it, you see what they're made of.
You see a lot of things about
it. Yeah, and you kind of, as I'm talking with them while they're training, you can pull some stuff out of them. And then when I, you know, interview them, then I kind of have a jumping off point. And they're, after they've kind of built that trust in me as well as I'm, you know, helping them. Because a lot of times in their training, I'll give them pointers when they're lifting or cheer them on. And you kind of build a trust with them so they're more open to speak to me. And so I found that's worked the best.
Do you have any questions that you ask everyone that you just want to know everyone's take on it?
When I ask coaches, I always ask their training philosophy because that's a big one I like to hear. Because every coach is different, and you know, not everybody coaches the same because not every person is the same. And for the athletes, I always kind of want to hear their backstory, just kind of know what they do and how they got into it. Those are probably the only two questions that I really ask continuously. And I also ask people, like, if you were going to give somebody advice that wants to get into strongman or training, what would that advice be? Because, you know, we all, when we first started, we needed advice. We had no clue how to get into it. It's a lot easier to get into it now than it was, say, 10 years ago. But it's still, you know, a lot of people hesitate to get into it, even though they're strong or I'm just nervous to compete. I know you were telling me before it took you a long time to get into it. And so that's, I want to hear what they tell people. And one other question I like to ask is, if you were going to try to talk your friends into coming to your gym, what would you tell them? because, you know, what's your sales pitch? Why is this gym that good? And that usually helps out in the interviews as well.
So you did actually did one on Strength Depot. Mm-hmm. Like, was it last year?
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
What brought you here?
So when I first started, you know, my whole thing is I wanted to go to gyms that were legitimate gyms. And so I just had a list of gyms that I knew for a fact from talking to other people were good strongman gyms. Because, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, I'm a strongman gym. You go there and they have a pair of farmer's handles and you're like, oh, so you're not a strongman gym, which is fine. As long as you're, you know, for me, it's as long as you're building a strength community, I'm cool with that. But, you know, there's only so many gyms across country that you walk in there like this and you have just equipment laying around. You have that community. And I knew that for a fact, this was one of those gyms. And so that's kind of one of my future plans as well is, you know, like Kale has Starting Strongman, and he has a map on there, and I think that's amazing. Kale's done a huge, tremendous positive for the sport by having that. But at the same time, when I look at the gym, to me, it's kind of like a menu, or not a menu. If I went to a city, I asked somebody, "Hey, what are the good restaurants around here?" And they just gave me a list of restaurants. I'd be like, "Okay, which ones are good?"
Right, yeah.
I don't know, and unless somebody's been to all those restaurants, you can't really say. So that's what I kind of want to go out is go to these gyms and say, this is a legit gym. You should train here. If you're in that area, you should definitely train here. So
the Z-Gals seal of approval.
I don't want it to be like a CrossFit certification or anything, right, but, right. You know, and it's not even a seal of approval. It's just, it's a video that says, I've been here. This is a legit gym. I think you should train here. So I want these gyms that are, you know, like this gym. I want them to grow and thrive, and I want them to be able to reach the community more and bring in more people that really want to be in the strength community. And for people that even don't want to train here or don't want to be part of the strength community, at least if there's other people out there watching it and seeing these gyms, you can build a fan base of people that are interested. Maybe they're not going to be competitors, but it puts a face to a name, you know, and it's...
We could do multiple things. I mean, sponsorships or, yeah. You know, you get the name out and it's got a good reputation. Like you said, if you're not going to be an athlete or a coach,
yeah,
then
exactly.
Maybe you want to help them out because they're a decent place to go. So you're going to offer to, you know, sponsor or something, you know, you're going to get some equipment or.
Yeah. And, you know, and then it also lets people know too, because we kind of have a stigma of the meathead.
Right.
Where people look at us like, oh, they're probably an asshole. I'm intimidated. They come up here and like, oh, they run Special Olympics fundraisers. They raise money for children with diseases, and you know they're
in
their community.
There's
beer in the fridge.
There's whiskey.
I'm drinking nice whiskey right now.
Donuts when you come in.
Donuts when you come in. But it puts a face to breaking down that stigma of, you know, the nicest people I've met are in the strength community.
Yep.
And that's why I love it so much too. Is, you know, I've written about this and I've put it in other videos. Is when I got out of the Army. I'm going from that brotherhood of close-knit tightness.
Everybody's got your...
And
then
I got out of the Army, and I'm like, oh, God, I was in a dark place for a while because I just couldn't find that anywhere. I had really good friends, but it's still just not that same thing. When I got in the strength community, it was like, damn, like, this is kind of what I've been searching for because you're going through hell together. Like, yeah, you're projecting that hell on yourself, and you choose to be in it, but... You know, you're going in, you're suffering for 3-4 hours on a Saturday with each other. And then you go out and you drink beers and barbecue. And that's kind of, I loved it. And I immediately fell. Yeah. Tough times want people.
You just, like, when you were talking about that, that shit just gave me chills.
Did it?
Yeah. Just, no, like, I mean, I've never been in the military. But to know that, like, somebody that has and that somebody that's been in the military and they feel the same type of kinship. Like in a strength community that they do in the military when you go to war, it's just humbling, man.
It's humbling. Yeah, it's definitely. Oh, I remember the first time that I actually went and trained with Team Boss. And you give them a shout out because that's where it all started for me. Team Boss, you know, Rick Freitag, Brad Ardrey, Joe Stanton, Sean. Sean Slemons. I was going to call him Lemons because I always call him Lemons. But, yeah, I remember the first day I was in there. They didn't let me use tape for the stones. I was hurting, I was in pain, and when we were done, I said, can I train, like, you know, two or three more times a week here? And Rick was like, no, you, once a week, that's all you need. You, like, train in the gym the rest of the time. I was just hooked because it was the most pain I've been through in a long time, and I loved every second of it. Yeah. And so I was just like, and I trained with them for 7-8 years. And every Saturday I was there, rain, sleet, or snow. I drove through snowstorms to get there. And it's just, it was, you know, that community. And I've loved it ever since. That's why I'm still 10 years in the game, still doing it and still love it. And, oh, that was loud. And, you know, and that's the thing too, when a new athlete comes to me and they really want to be competitive, I say, are you going to be here in 5 years? Because it's a hard sport. If you don't, I'll train, like when I train someone, I'm like, do you want to be here 3 to 5 years? If you can say you're going to be here in 5 years, then we'll go full bore. But if not, I don't know, you know, because it's hard. It's a hard sport and a lot of people don't stay in it very long. But I think when you have a community like these gyms, that it's easier to stay in it that long.
Yeah, I think too, we on the last episode, we interviewed Michael De La Pava from Battle X, and he was saying he's learned discipline through, you know, through all of his athletic endeavors. And so that's what came to mind when you said you had to learn restraint, basically. So you came and you were hooked and you're like, I want to do this all the time. And they're like, no, you know, you got to hold back. And that's discipline.
Yeah.
Showing up to do the work is discipline. Staying in the game, you know, giving it a shot for 5 years, that's discipline.
Staying away from the gym and recovering,
yes,
is discipline.
Exactly. Some of us do better than others. Some of us are bad at that.
You got a question for you, Zach.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about the gyms, the actual, like, you know, the actual gym and what you see. But as far as for the people go, like, what commonality do you see in the, say, in the people that are driven to do what we do? Like in the strength sports?
Honestly, no commonality except that they're just willing to work. It's such a huge spectrum of people that you just would never expect that it's kind of crazy. It's, you know, I think everybody that's in strongman is really dedicated to it is a little off. Definitely.
No, we say that all the time.
There's definitely some issues in people. Any strength sport where you're putting yourself in that much pain, there's definitely a masochist type issue in your head. But
because you're committing to a life of pain, not just
pretty
in
much.
The gym or the hard work, but
waking
a life
up,
of being sore.
Yeah, waking up, feeling like I got hit by a bus.
If it's a good day, if not an injury.
Yeah.
An injury.
And that's a thing. But, I mean, you know, you go to a gym, and this is another reason I love these kind of sports. You go to a gym and it's a doctor, a lawyer, a mother of three, a college kid, unemployed.
All socioeconomic.
You know, all
spectrum,
everything.
Sorry.
And all that shit goes out the window when it comes out. Who's up next? It's your set. It doesn't matter if you're a doctor. It doesn't matter if you're an 18-year-old kid just out of high school. It's who's up. And, you know, nobody cares that you drive a Mercedes. Nobody cares that you drive a beat-up Pinto. It's... you prove your worth by being in the gym. There's no...
You earn your respect.
You earn your respect, yeah. It's, and there's no, you know, do they look better than me? You know, there's no physical thing. There's no, it's nothing. It's who's going to put in the work. You don't have to be the strongest, but you better put your ass under that bar and work your ass off. Otherwise, you lose that respect. And so that's kind of why I love it. You know, it's... there is no marker. It's just, will you work? And will you not see out when the time comes to step up?
Do you notice a commonality on the type of gym by region? Like the Midwest kind of gym versus the East Coast versus the South?
Not really. I mean, it's just like any other regional thing. Just, I feel like when you get in there, the initial meet and greet, it's, you know, in the South they might be a little more hospitable than somebody in the West. I don't know, it's just like any other regional thing. You notice that kind of in the beginning when you're talking and everybody's warming up, but once it gets down to training, it's all the same. Thank you.
Another
force feeding me alcohol, because I don't know where I'm going to next yet, so
he's staying put for a while.
Yeah,
there is a couch here, so.
When you're in town, you driving an RV out there? You staying?
No, I have my car. I camp, stay in hotels.
Look for couches.
Luckily, 34, so most of my friends have houses with guest rooms in them, which is actually kind of a...
Ooh, you're fancy.
No, it was kind of an observation I made halfway through, which I kind of laughed at myself about, because when I started planning this, you know, summer-long tour, I was like, yeah, I'll just hang out, stay at my friend's house. This shows you how immature I am. And I was like, I'll just sleep on people's couches.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after I started going to people's houses, they're like, no, I have a guest room. I'm like, oh yeah, we're in our 30s.
We're adults.
I'm not in college anymore. So that was a big eye opener for me. But no, it's, you know, I have a tent in the back of my car, and I have a cot that I set up if I need to, and anywhere really.
Jen said it like when we were at the championships yesterday.
USS Nationals.
Jen said it. She said, "You're living my life. You're living the life that I want to live." And it's almost like that California counterculture. You know what I meant?
I know.
You speak Chuck. That it's like that culture, like you see like people taking the pilgrimage to Gold's Gym Venice, and you see people like back in the 70s they would go to like, you know, Woodstock, or you know, where was it,
people go to Westside now too,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. But it's almost like that kind of a culture, like you're living, Jen said that you're living her the life that she would love to live.
And that's exactly, I mean, that's so, I've been following Zach on social media for a while, we're Facebook friends, and so I've been living vicariously through him. And so I decided a couple weeks ago, I messaged him, I DM'd him, I'm like, I just want to let you know that what you're doing matters, and it matters to me, because, you know, this is my dream. I mean, I'll drive here 8 hours. I drive regularly at home at least 2 hours to another gym, because of the community and the equipment and everything else. I have visited, every time I travel for work or for, you know, personal reasons, I'm always looking on, usually starting Strength Gym Finder to find a strongman gym. So it's a priority to me, and if I could sack up and be Zach, that, I mean, that's exactly what I would do. So it's super cool to me that you're doing it.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I guess it's it looks a little more glamorous than it is.
No, it's
on the road.
Yeah, it's, you have to be very comfortable with being uncomfortable. And you know, one thing I got when I got out of the Army, and this is going to sound very millennial of me, but I said, I don't want a job where I'm required to wear pants. You know, like, I just, to me, some people it's okay to sit in a cubicle. For me, it'd be the death of me. So I was just, much to the chagrin of my family and probably, you know, anybody else out there, it's been kind of a rough go, but, I'm not a person that, I don't need a lot of stuff. Like, I lived in probably 9 different places over the past 10 years, and every time I've just got rid of more stuff because I don't want it, I don't need it, and I really don't own anything that I couldn't walk away from in a heartbeat. So I don't mind sleeping in my car, and I don't mind eating gas station sandwiches. So it's like, you know, and I have no responsibilities outside of myself really, except bills and stuff. So make money any way I can and just kind of go out there on the road. And it's definitely not for everyone, and it is very tough at times, but you know,
but it's real.
It's real, and it's, I'd rather look back in 40 years.
You'll never forget this.
Exactly. I'd rather look back in 40 years and be like, I did that, instead of look, you know, in 40 years, be like, I got a pretty sweet 401k I can live off till I die. I don't know. Like, it's, to me, it's just me, but, and I know it's not for everyone, and other people would rather have other comforts, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, each person's different. Yeah. So
that's today. What's your vision for the future? I mean, we talked a little bit about it. You talked about maybe bringing on a team, and I was wondering about that. Like what specifically were you looking for a team? You also mentioned that you're hopeful that like your viewership and your support will grow. So I was thinking, like, do you need a marketing person? You know, do you need tech people? Like, what are you thinking about in terms of a team? And then what's your vision for the future of Finding Strength?
So, yeah, I'd definitely love to bring on a team. I'd love to have, honestly, a cameraman. I'm okay at it, but I'm not, you know, I have no training in it at all. I just picked up a camera and kind of watched YouTube videos on how to be a cameraman and went from there. Yeah, I'd love to have a marketer, a video editor. I'd like to employ people, honestly, and I'd like to have my own business where I can help other people that are passionate about it find a job that they like to do, and you know, grow from there. Eventually, I'd like to have a TV show, like a Netflix series or something like that. I have a couple ideas on that, and I also want to do one or two full-length documentaries.
Like about, still working. About finding strength or about some of the gyms?
No, so I like finding strength, and I like going to the gyms, but the more I've gone on to the gyms, I've realized that I like connecting with the people more. Because, like, I can go to a gym, I can get some footage, and I can show you the gym for, you know, a minute clip. After that, you're like, all right, that's the gym.
That's cool.
But it's the people that matter. And so, you know, I've been on the road, I've been doing a lot more interviews with people and kind of just, I want to get to know people more. So I have one idea I want to do. It's called She Lifts, and I want to follow four women, one from each, like, strength thing. So strongman, powerlifting, weightlifting, and CrossFit. And follow them for a month as they get ready for a competition. And that's, I want to do a documentary on that. And I also want to do a TV show called Meathead. And basically it's, you know, eating. It would be training with people at a gym where I can interact with them. And this is why I want a cameraman and an editor, so they, I can actually interact with people and train with them. And then we all go out somewhere to eat. So you get both elements of, like, a Food Network show and the Meathead side of it. And so, you know, it's, cause everywhere, every time I go to a gym afterwards, they're like, hey, we gotta go eat.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, we always have to eat.
And we all go out and eat. So, like, why wouldn't I train people and then we go, hey, we wanna eat, get to the restaurant ahead of time and say, hey, we wanna come out and eat. And it's usually a good barbecue place because we like meat.
Oh, wow.
So it's usually a good barbecue place or a steak joint. And it's like, I would love to do that. And just, we all bullshit at the table, go back in the, you know, kitchen, talk to the chef. And, you know, because usually these restaurants know the people that are coming in. So they know these meatheads when they come in. There's six guys and girls that are all been training and they get an order for 12 meals.
Yeah, yeah.
They know who they are, you know? So
make a reputation for themselves. That's really cool.
Yeah, getting all of us at a buffet is always an experience to see the chef.
And all you can eat, yeah. We've actually, so there's this sushi place that opened up. I'm from Appleton, Wisconsin, and we would go after strongman training. And there's really only maybe six of us sometimes. That place did not stay in business. I have to think we contributed to that. It's like $20 all you can eat, and we annihilated that place every week.
I remember one of my favorite times ever going out to eat was it was Team Boss, and so I don't know, some people might remember him, but one of our old training partners, Phil Brown, who passed away a couple years ago, he was probably about 6'5", 420 pounds. But we also had Mike Jenkins with us,
man.
Who obviously passed away as well. And Mike Jenkins was what? Same thing, 6'5", 6'7", 420 pounds. We walked into a Beatty's Mongolian buffet, and they were just, the whole restaurant was just like, huh? So it was those two, and then seven other strong men, and they were just, every time they got up to go get food, the whole entire place just stopped and looked and on. I was just like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's to your advantage, though, because sometimes the long lines, like, hopefully, like, they kind of clear out, like, the Red Sea, and let the big guys go through.
We always have fun, like, going to the bar. And, like, you know, you always come in with your people and whatnot. And the bouncers are always like, we're not going to have any trouble out of you guys, are we? No, no, no. We're just here to drink a beer. All right. Well, you guys want a shot? Sure. We'll take a shot. So it's always fun to do that,
trying
too.
Trying to calm you down right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, automatically, like, let's interject right now and try and stop anything. But most of the time, people are just so genuinely nice.
Well, yeah. And that's one thing I found about, you know, strength sports is, you're never going to really find a guy that's huge that's an asshole. It's just, you're that big and strong, you don't have a reason to be.
Right,
it's kind of like,
nothing to prove,
you have nothing to prove.
Right.
You know, it's, I want to wear a pink shirt, I'll wear a pink shirt. Who's going to tell me not to, you know? And so,
who's going to fuck with me?
Exactly. And so you can walk into places, you carry yourself a little lighter because you're not really worried about it and you don't have these insecurities that, you know, and especially if you're in a community like this where people are always nice and always helping each other, that grows on you. You're, what do they say, you're a combination of the five people you hang out with most. So if you're with a bunch of supportive people, and like in strongman or, you know, a lot of powerlifting gyms I've been to are the same. You're gonna walk in and you're gonna be a nice guy, and that's, you know, anytime I go to a gym or somebody asks me, you know, on question, like, you know, do you know anyone in my area, I say, go look, find the biggest guy in your gym. I guarantee you he'll help you. It's rare you find a really big guy that's gonna be an asshole. They're out there, but 99, you know, 9 times out of 10, you go to a gym, you ask the biggest guy, he's probably gonna help you out.
For the most part, yeah, like, absolutely. And like, I think the community is fostered. I think that, like you said, like, most of the larger people really don't have anything to prove to anybody. They just want to, you know, exist and do what they do. That's pretty much it. Quick question for you, Zach. Like, you have, like, such an absolute love and affinity for this sport. Like, you have, yeah, like, for strength sports, and you can just feel it. Like, every time, like, when I speak to you, like, I feel, like, your love for it. How was that fostered? Like, how did you get into it? You ask people all the time, like, how did they get into strength training? How did you get into strength training and develop that bug, or the virus, as we call it?
Well, just strength training in general, I think I was about 11 years old in middle, or 12 years old in middle school. And one day, me and my friends were in the gym benching, and I think I hit 155 pounds on the bench at 12 years old. And I was like,
wow,
huh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just kind of started lifting. I went to the local gym and just kind of fell in love with it from there. And then when I was in the Army, one of our battalion sergeants held a regimental-wide strongman competition. And so that morning, my first sergeant said, hey, you're competing in the strongman competition? And so I was like, all right. I went out there. This is about 2002, 2003. Competed. I think I got third or fourth place out of like 13 people. And then, you know, it was a couple of years before I found it again. Then I moved out to Columbus in 2007 to go to school. I was Googling it. I was, you know, I went to the West Side for a little bit. I tried out for the rugby team at Ohio State.
Oh, shit.
I never played rugby before that, but.
Did you get to play?
No. I was 2 weeks on it, and nobody really told me how the game is played, and I didn't know how it was played, so. Went out for practice for about 2 weeks, and then I found Team Boss and Strongman. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do Strongman instead of rugby. And so it was just, you know, ever since then, I Googled. There used to be a Strongman webpage called Must See Strongman.
Okay.
Somehow I found that on Google, found Rick Freitag, emailed him, and he was kind of like, you know, what are your lifts? And,
Zach's getting his ear blown in right now.
I am. Chad Coy's blowing my ear, whispering me sweet nothings.
I'm whispering sweet nothings as I fondle his buttocks. It's so tight. It's a tight buttocks that it is.
And thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
I remember when he was at Rick Freitag's. He was this chunky little fat kid that was pressing. It was great. It was awesome. And he just kept, and he actually listened, which is a very new trait for some of these millennials.
I'm gonna be 34, like, man. I'm not a millennial.
You are. You just gotta admit it. You are.
All right, I am.
Yeah, you're not old saggy balls yet. So.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you do for Strongman.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. All us old guys appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's awesome. That's old. That old gunslinger slang saying says, "Remember the face of your fathers." And a lot of guys don't know who the hell the old people were. So we appreciate you when you bring us up and.
Definitely.
Kieran and all those old fucks like that. Yeah, I said Kieran's an old fuck, and so's Don Pope, because you're all the Popey's from Cleveland. He's too big of a pussy to come back out and play with the old guys.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard said that Pope.
Shots fired. Shots pew, fired. Pew, pew.
All you old guys over 40, there is a Masters Pro Division. You should come out and play with us. You know, some of us have stuck around. Some of you faded away. Just come back, because it's a lot of fun.
You heard that. You heard that first.
Plug.
Thanks, Chad.
You need to come visit me.
That's Chad Coy, folks.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Thanks for coming out, guys. Cheers. So nice to see you. So
nice
to meet
you. Too.
Hey, check the podcast out. Sorry, I'm gonna just talk to real quick. Check the podcast out. Here, hold on. So Mike was playing with his kid, and then you know, Chad was kind of giving some advice to Zach, but
millennials.
Yeah,
no, apparently I'm 34 and I'm a millennial, which actually it was kind of funny. When I first started finding strength, one of my mentors, who's about 9 years younger than me, Trevor Cashy, one of the smartest people I ever met in my life. And I said, what do you think of this idea? And he goes, honestly, you sound like a fucking millennial. I was like, you're a millennial. Like, but, you know, it's true. And it's definitely an idea that a lot of people who are kind of in the set in their ways are just like, that's a bad idea. He never said it was a bad idea. He just said I sound like a millennial. So, but it's been fun. And
I like what Buddy Morris said. Buddy Morris said, if you say that you're old school, it just means you're not willing to learn.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. I heard, I got a chance to hear Buddy Morris speak at the SPS conference. Mm-hmm. Were you at that?
No, which...
Well, the last, sports-specific conference out in Columbus a couple months ago.
I was at the first one. Okay. I actually had breakfast with Buddy that morning.
Did you really?
Yeah, JL knew him, and...
Is he that engaging, like, even in person?
I mean, I was kind of sitting off to the side. I didn't really get a word in, but him and JL mostly spoke the whole time. But, yeah, he was very engaging, and he's a great speaker, and definitely somebody to learn a lot. Him and Joe Ken were two of my favorite speakers there. And Joe DeFranco was there, too. He was awesome. So, I learned a lot at those conferences, and that's one thing I always tell new coaches and stuff coming up is if you want to be a coach, go to those conferences because you're going to hear from the best in the industry. That and the Swiss conference.
Oh, man, with Ken Kennekin? Yeah. And then Ken Kennekin was at the SPS conference, mm-hmm. and then Mike and I are actually going to the Perform Better conference in July.
Okay.
And so I think Dan John's going to be there, Lee Boyle, who else? Gray Cook's going to be there. I don't know if Stuart McGill is going to be there, mm-hmm. but for anybody that can get a chance to go to one of these, go. Because you're not hearing from just, like, you know, a couple people. You're hearing from some of the best minds in the industry.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing. One of the greatest minds that I don't think gets enough credit is Mark Watts out of Ohio.
Absolutely.
And he, you know, I've always read his stuff on Elite FTS when he was still there. And he still, I think, posts stuff once in a while. But... You know, his whole thing was go to conferences, go to these things, but meet people. And that's the biggest thing about being a strength coach is meeting, getting those connections, learning how to talk to people, first of all, and then, you know, learning from everyone. Because you can be the greatest strength coach in the world, but if nobody knows who you are, who cares? You know, you can write the greatest workout plan, but if only one person is doing it, you contributed nothing. So it's like, if you can get out there and affect a lot of people and get your message out there and you can connect with these people who can help you get your message out there, then you're going to be a lot better. And you need to learn. You have to learn. You have to continuously learn.
I think, like, you know, stemming from being like a registered nurse, like, I think when I walk into a room, the biggest thing that I do is make somebody feel comfortable. And, like, I'll walk into the room and I'll say, all right, all those pretty nurses, I'm not it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is the best you got going for you. Make somebody, like, feel a little bit comfortable. And I think a good strength coach does the same thing.
Yeah.
I think a good strength coach breaks down, like, psychological walls. Mm-hmm. And not only are they a great strength coach, but they listen to their client.
Yeah. And that was a big thing JL always kind of stressed to us was, you know, everybody knows the how and everybody knows the what, but nobody knows the why. And so if you're not telling your clients the why, they don't care. They're not going to buy in.
Yeah.
And so that's a big thing. And, yeah, making them feel comfortable, being able to socialize. And, you know, everybody's different. Like, I might use three different cues for the same movement on three different people because some people listen, they're audible learners. Some people are visual learners.
Very good.
So it's, I can't use the same cue for everyone. And I can't, some people are different. You have different limb lengths. You have, you know, different training histories. And so you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to read people, and you have to keep learning. And that's a big thing. Is the one thing I always know, and this is like a cliche now at this point, is if somebody speaks in absolutes in training, you know they're an asshole, and you should get away from them as fast as possible. I've heard so many times over the years, like, box squats don't do anything. I'm like, really? I was watching it yesterday. People failing Atlas stones. You know why? Because their hips suck. They're trying to all relying on their upper back. If they did some box squats and built some speed in their hips, they're going to throw that fucking Atlas stone up there. 360 over 54 inches really isn't that hard. I mean, I know I'm just, you know, armchair quarterbacking, but it shouldn't be. If you're at a national level, it shouldn't be that hard. I did a Platinum Plus 4 years ago, 390 over, you know, 54 inches, six reps in 60 seconds, like, and it wasn't that difficult. And so it's, if you're going to be at a national level, you need to be be at a national level. And that's the thing, is people are, they're dismissing different things because it's not what they grew up with or it's not what they know. And, you know, we'll learn something else. If something's not working, change your direction.
Yeah, I think I said that last week. I was like, or the week before, I'm like, if something doesn't work, don't use it. Yeah. Or if something works, like, you hear all these people getting, like, this different type of programming. You hear people like, okay, well, 531, I'm done with 531. What else should I do? Well, was 531 working for you? Yeah. Did you stall? No. Then why are you changing it? Right, What's wrong with you?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. And people try and, like, overcomplicate the wheel.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, what's funny is you have so many people nowadays talking shit about the West Side Method. And you talk to anybody that went to West Side, when somebody brings that up, they go, oh, was their name up on the board at West Side? No? Well, then they don't know what the hell they're talking about because they've never been to West Side. It's true. Like, it's not just the same thing for everyone at West Side. I walked in the first time there and Lou was like, deadlift. I deadlifted. He goes, all right, this is what you need to do. So, yeah, it's the conjugate method, but he also tailors it to every person.
Yeah.
And so 99% of the time when somebody says West Side sucks because they don't know what the hell they're talking about, they're doing it wrong. And so, you know, it's just like anything else, 531. I did 531, but I kind of changed some things. So you didn't do 531. And that's kind of when I train people. I say, as soon as you change my programming by one set, one rep, it's no longer my program. So if you want to adjust it, talk to me, then I can take that brunt. But after you change it, the onus is on you. And so that's the thing, is there's different training modalities. Stick to it. Give it 12, 16 weeks, and if it doesn't work, fine, throw it away to the side. But if you do 4 weeks and you go, this sucks, well, you suck.
You know, I think it was Mike Boyle. Mike Boyle has a new book out. All right, bye, guys. Be careful. All right. Mike Boyle has a new book out. It's called, like, Advanced Functional Training. And Boyle was talking about, like, programming. Boyle was talking about programming like a chef. Like, you have master chefs, and then you have people that are just learning, like, you know, they just graduated. And if you have, like, a regular chef, like a master chef will do whatever he does, and he cooks his own thing, and he makes it beautiful and perfect. But if you're just starting, meaning just starting a program, and you don't know how to do it, why would I, shouldn't I follow the programming of that master chef? I should do what I can do for that master, or like if I'm doing that recipe, and make it is the best that I can the same way, because at least I'm learning. Now, if I'm trying to take it and I'm not a master chef and I just try and like stir the pot here and add this here and add this here, I'm taking different shit of different, like, you know, recipes, and I'm throwing shit together.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, same thing with programming. Like, if you're not following your programming, you've changed it. You're now not following my programming.
Yeah.
You're following somebody else.
Well, what I was going to say to that, because it's really funny that you said that, because that's exactly where my head went. And, Zach, you talked about cooking before, too. So that's the analogy that came to my head, too. But so all the master chefs, when they get to the point that they can improvise, 9 times out of 10, it's based on a classic anyway. So yeah. You learn the classics. You know, you learn it the right way. And then you can make it your own. So it's probably like programming.
Yeah, well, and I see that a lot now because there's so much information on the internet that it almost becomes, you know, paralysis by analysis because...
Oh, good point.
You have all these things coming at you, and you have these new guys that have been training for a year or two, and they're like, well, I'm on the science-based program. I looked at the studies, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, but you don't even know what the difference between eccentric and concentric is, so why do you care? And, you know, it's a quote that I took from Trevor Cashy again a long time ago about nutrition. And he's like, you have guys that are 30% body fat and they're worried about the digestibility of their intra-workout carbohydrate and the osmolarity. And you're like, just get less fat.
Yeah.
How about that? Like, don't worry about that. And, you know, that was like, God damn, that's really true. Like,
build that foundation, and then you make tweaks, or you make those, you know, you do the finish work.
Yeah, you start with a 20,000-foot view, and then you learn something, you go to 15,000-foot view. These guys are like, I'm right on the ground, and you're like, no, you're not. Like,
yeah. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, you see these people, and, like, when you were talking about training in absolutes, my program works best. Really? Okay, so You know, I have longer limbs. My arms are a little bit longer. My legs are a little bit shorter. You have incredibly long legs, and you have incredibly short arms. Is your program really the best for me? Or, you know, like, it's just the way that, I don't know, everybody's different, and people have to find that out. And then people will ask you a question, like, and I realize, like, when you first start out, people will ask you a question about how to increase your bench. Later, James. About how to increase your bench. And somebody will say, oh, well, you know, you should bench with your legs up. Or you should, this is what you should do. If you've been in the game 20, 10, 20, 30 years, it's a complicated question. How do I get my bench up? It's not like just an easy-ass answer. And I think people forget that.
Well, I think a big thing, too, and it's something that drives me nuts, is people don't develop a coaching eye. Because, like, I was a strength coach for about 3 years. I am definitely not the greatest out there, but somebody's been training for, and I've also been training for 20 years. If somebody out there is training and they're watching somebody squat, I'm gonna be able to pick apart that squat a million times more than they are.
Yeah.
Just because I've developed and I can see things that they can't see. Somebody that's, you know, Buddy Morris or JL, they're gonna be able to pick out a million more things than I'm gonna be able to, because they can see things that I can't see. But I go into a gym now, and I see somebody squat, and I'm like, yeah, it was a decent squat. They come up, and you get all these people that are just getting into the strength sports. They're like, well, your knees were valgus by 15 degrees. And you're just like, you're picking apart something that doesn't even get picked apart. Like, it was a good squat. They did it safely. Was there some disparagement that I could pick apart? Probably. But that's for their coach to pick out. And or if I'm coaching them, I'll work on that in the accessories. Like,
yeah.
And I'll say, you know, if it's that bad, I'll say, hey, this is where we need to work. But I'm going to build those strengths up in the accessory work so that they don't do that anymore. And it's just, I don't know. It always bothers me when there's 15 coaches and one lifter. And then, you know, I always yell at people like, hey, look, you can cheer them on. One person coaches, and then everybody else just either shut up or just say, go, go, go. If you have 15 people saying knees out, head up, arms back.
Yeah.
And they're just starting to squat. They're a year into it. They don't know. Like, 30 people yelling at them? That's confusing. They're already trying to think how to squat. Stop,
yeah.
Too many chefs in the kitchen.
But then they get done, and you have 30 people telling them how their squat sucked. And it's like, how about stop?
Their squat on their back. You
know? Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the thing. Yeah, it's, you're telling them how bad their squat sucked when they get out of the rack, and they're new to it, and they're like, oh, there was that much wrong with it? No, there wasn't that much wrong with it. They're just trying to be, you know, these brand new coaches that are looking for, they're nitpicking stuff.
You just hit a 700-pound squat, like a quarter inch high, and I'm going to nitpick it because it's a quarter inch high? Fuck you.
Yeah.
my old man calls that, my pops calls that majoring on the minor.
Exactly.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Mike with the drilling down again.
When you hear that for 36 years, you know.
Put that euphemism right in my pocket.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, Zach, we can't tell you how much we appreciate having you on. If you want to stay, I want to keep you on for a couple more.
Okay.
We actually went to the Strongman Nationals.
So it was United States Strongman Nationals yesterday. Yesterday was my day. It's been a long weekend. Saturday, June 24th. You want me to do the shout outs?
Go ahead.
Oh, so. It's a testament to how awesome this gym is and its athletes. We wanted to give shout outs to our athletes that placed. Okay. Tina Kinsley, who's actually co-owner of Strength Depot. We don't give her enough shout outs and credit on the podcast, but she and Shane own Strength Depot together. Tina kicked ass yesterday, and it was a beautiful thing to watch all day long. And she placed second in the women's 165 middleweight masters group, and
nearly took it all.
Yeah.
Yep, it was a really close contest. Great things to come from her in the future, I know. And we couldn't be more proud of her. So fun to be there with her, watch her, and help her through it.
Couldn't be more proud of you, Tina. That was awesome. It was inspiring.
You were fucking badass, Tina.
Yeah, I got a lot of it on video, I think. So hope you have some highlights.
Oh, that'd
there.
Be awesome. That would be so great. Okay. Brian Cochran, another athlete here, he took first. He's our men's under 165 national champ.
That is incredible.
I know. Brian, if you looked at the guy, he's such a good athlete and super humble, totally willing to help.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's a super great guy.
And if you look at him, he doesn't have the build of, like, what you would see, like, a typical strongman.
Technician.
Yep. But he is just absolutely one of the strongest, most technical lifters you'll ever see. It's beautiful to watch.
And then Erin Janowitz, she's another great athlete here. She took second place in the women's 123 lightweight open class. Erin kicks ass. She's another one who's like Brian, very unassuming, little wispy, I would call her. But she's, man, she's a great deadlifter. She's strong as shit.
And she's got a killer instinct.
Yep.
House mom by day.
Yep.
Her job, everything else in the mornings and at night, just an absolute gangster.
Yep, she brings it every single
Thug
time.
Thug life.
And then Nicole Walters, second place women's 181 heavyweight open. She kicked absolute ass yesterday, too. Everyone was on fire yesterday.
Every lift, it was just pure strength.
And let me just give a shout out to my Polish brother, Josh.
Josh Rutowski.
My Polish brother, Josh. And
he's gonna kill
do I say it or do I not?
No.
All right.
But he literally gave everything yesterday.
Josh,
figuratively and literally.
He literally gave everything yesterday.
He was in Josh is great because he took himself down from like 260 to 220, and Josh made himself. And the thing is he's such a well-rounded lifter. He's fast. Like, when you watch, I'm going to post a video on the Strength Depositions Instagram, and it's going to be a video of Josh's farmer walks, and he had 300 pounds each hand, and it was one of the best farmer walks I've ever seen. It was so damn fast. It was just off the hook. And Josh is all heart, and he does his programming properly. Yep. He does, like, everything that he does.
Nutrition.
He's got his nutrition. Everything he does, he has a thought for. And, you know, Josh was just kicking ass. I love the guy. Josh is my Polish brother.
We're proud of you, Josh.
We are proud of you. And
every single one of our athletes that competed yesterday.
Especially who?
Nick Davis. Big Nick. He's right here with us. He's going to say a few words.
Get in here,
so tell us what you did yesterday.
I won the junior national championship, and that's under 23 years old, and I qualified for junior worlds.
That is so fucking awesome. You kill it. You kill it every week here in the gym, and I see you, and you're the nicest guy, most helpful, friendly, and kicked ass at school, and
I'm being told not to swear. We're trying to always make him mean and make him into something else.
But no, he's doing pretty well being the good guy.
He was pretty mean yesterday. I got to give it to him.
Good.
Yeah, I got a little mad.
Smiling but mean.
So when is Junior Worlds and where is it?
I'm pretty sure Willie, who owns USS, he said it was in, like, the second week of August. I know it's during that balloon
festival. So it's coming up.
Yeah, it's coming up. I know last year it was, like, in September, but I know it's during the balloon festival in Quebec, so.
So it's going to be in Canada. Do you have a passport?
No, I have to get
Dude,
that.
You better get on that, yeah. You should
you
get on
expedited.
That. I'm being like your mom right now. Nick, go to the... Go get it tomorrow.
Mom came and hugged me yesterday.
So sweet. She Facebook friend me.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome, Rick.
Yeah. Thank you.
You worked really hard. You're 20 years old?
Yeah, I'm 20. I turn 21 next month.
20 years old, 6'4", 340 pounds. I'll
there
take
you
it.
Go.
Yep.
Nice.
I need to just put some size on it. It'd be good.
Who else did we have yesterday?
We did good.
We had Bob.
So yeah, we had a whole list of athletes that we'll post.
Okay.
So Mike was going to tell us about that.
Cannoli. I'm constantly eating. We're going to be putting up video and photos on the Instagram page at Strength Depositions. And we're going to be creating a Facebook page at Strength Depositions.
If Jen was on her game, it would have been up already. Jen's slacking.
No, Jen's the franchise has done plenty.
I just want to say thank you to Zach and to everyone who hosted today and everything and came in early. Appreciate you. And listening to your journey and everything else was absolutely inspiring, and what you put into it and what you got out of it. And just kind of the spiritual journey and the self-awareness and everything else that you're talking about with that. It's really what you're doing for strength sports is is a testimony. It's awesome.
I appreciate that.
You're taking your gifts and you're giving them and utilizing them to the best of your ability, and that's an amazing thought.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, and thanks for having me on. I always love coming, you know, Strength Depot, and like, you know, glad I could talk to people about it. And
you can stay on my couch anytime.
I can stay in your couch. I appreciate
anytime.
That.
And you know what? I got a guest bedroom.
Oh, see?
Well, like adult. Really wants a couch, though.
I do, actually. The whole time I was in the Army, I stayed on a couch. So when I got to the Army and I got out of basic, I got to my unit. First thing I bought was a leather couch. I slept on that the whole time I was at my unit. So didn't sleep in my bed once.
Tells how chill you are.
Yeah. But no, I appreciate it. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on.
That concludes this episode of Strength Dispositions in the podcast. Depositions. It's been a long day. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.